I'm Kim Singletary.
And I'm Rich Collins.
And you're listening to Biz Talks,
a weekly conversation with local business leaders about topics affecting New Orleans and Southeast Louisiana.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Rich Collins. Today's guest is Kevin Ferguson, Vice President of External Affairs and Membership at New Orleans & Company. He's here to talk about the Home for Good New Orleans Homeless Initiative, a community-wide effort to achieve low to no unsheltered homelessness in New Orleans by the end of 2025. Kevin Ferguson, welcome to the show.
Rich, thank you so much for having me.
All right, so if you can, run us through, what are the goals of this initiative?
Well, the goals of the overall initiative are to really bring together a lot of different partners from the private sector, businesses, residents, and the nonprofit leaders that are really trying to be impactful about homelessness in New Orleans. And this, the goal is to achieve low to no unsheltered homelessness in New Orleans by the end of 2025. And so what we're really trying to do is create a community where homelessness is rare, it's brief, and that when folks do encounter that, we're able to get them off the street quickly and make sure we have all the resources that are necessarily, one, to prevent homelessness, but then if it does occur, to get people off the street quickly.
Now, I don't want to put you in the spot and ask for exact numbers, but can you give us just a rough description of the size of the situation here, say, versus another big city?
Certainly. So, you know, they do an annual point in time count every year where they physically go out and really count the number of folks that are homeless, both unsheltered and living on the street, as well as those that are in shelters and treatment centers. And so in New Orleans, that number was around 1,500 in January of 2023. So that's the number we've been working off of as we kind of stood up this broader effort. And it's a lot of work from the outreach workers to connect with that community. They do an incredible job. But to frame that, you know, one of the groups we're working with, Clutch Consulting, who's been a leading partner on this, worked for the city of Houston. And their population at the start of Clutch's consulting contract was around 60,000. And they were able to reduce that by half. So we're rather fortunate that while it's a significant issue in our community, the total numbers are a lot smaller than you see in other major cities.
Is that just because New Orleans is such a small town relative to?
Yeah, so I think it's a couple of things. One, we've got a smaller population. Most of the services are really centered in the downtown area. Houston is a much bigger population. And, you know, there's not the precise data that I think we'd all crave on this. But the reality is the vast majority of people that are homeless within a community are from that community, are the outlying areas, right? So while we know there's a population of folks that this is a bit more of a lifestyle, they're called travelers, the reality is that the vast majority of people experiencing homelessness in our community and other communities are really from this area. And so we have that smaller population to start with, which means that we have a smaller homeless population as well.
Well, it's hopeful because it seems like a problem that we have a chance at solving.
Yeah, and I think that's the approach we took. You know, I came to New Orleans & Company in January of 22. By March, I kind of identified that this was an area we need to get more engaged with. And as you started to understand the players in this, the nonprofits, who was leading locally, I think everybody had the sense that while we had a real issue here, when you looked at the numbers, it just felt more manageable than other cities were. And so that's what's been great about this process. I think we've been able to really bring together a broad coalition, elected officials led by Councilmember Harris, nonprofit partners. So Unity, who's the continuum care provider for our region, has done a phenomenal job bringing in additional resources, working with those service providers. And then groups like United Way of Southeast Louisiana, Greater New Orleans Foundation have all been a big part of that. But so much support from other entities as well, Downtown Development District, Department of Transportation at the state level. We've really got a lot of partners that have come together for this initiative to try to be impactful. And I think that's what excites me the most, that we've brought together a coalition that comes from various places. Everybody has different views on homelessness and folks have different views on how we need to be impactful. But what we've done is keep everybody together with that common goal of let's get this down to low to no homelessness. And that's help us cut through some of those conflict points that I think have popped up at other times and places.
And so I imagine, depending on the individual person who's in an unhoused situation, the reasons they're there differ person by person, and the solutions can also change depending on the person.
Oh, certainly. And, you know, I'll add, when I started digging into this, one of the people that was a great resource was Richard Martinez at Greater New Orleans Foundation. And he had done a substantial amount of research even before his job with Ganoff as a grad student. And, you know, one of the things he told me that really stuck with me was that people come to homelessness from all different situations, right? But that the longer they are homeless, the more likely they are to have some of those challenges you talk about, right? That if you didn't have a mental health issue before you were living on the street, after being on the street for months, you're likely to develop one. If you didn't have a substance abuse issue before living on the street, those are things that occur when you're living in that community. Because it's like any other community, there's going to be a movement towards the means. And so that's why it's so critical that we do this, not just from a humane perspective and get people off the street, but to do it with a little bit of pace and urgency, because we know the longer people are on the street, the harder it is to get them off. And so that's one of the things that has been really special about this initiative. You know, everybody's focused on rehousing. They have been for a long time. But what we're able to do with the resources we have and this coalition we've built is really to do it in a rapid scale that really stresses the system. But again, the urgency of getting folks off the street just can't be discounted.
Okay, so can you run us through some of the tools in the toolkit?
Certainly. So I think it's important to give just a little perspective. You know, this effort largely started based around a couple of things. One, Unity was seeking a HUD grant from the federal government in addition to the funds that they receive on an annual basis to operate the continuum of care in the community. And so that effort was really branded as the Task Force to Reduce Street Homelessness. It was chaired by retired Judge Calvin Johnson, by Bill Hines from Jones Walker. And what they did was really bring together all the community support needed to apply for that grant. It was a competitive federal grant, so we were competing with other cities. And so what you needed was really matching contributions in the form of housing vouchers from your housing authorities, mental health and health care provided by hospital groups like Tulane University, LCMC, Ochsner. And then you needed some fundraising. You needed some cash support from individuals and businesses around the community. And so that effort really was happening at the end of 22 and 20 and beginning of 23 to put together that competing match for all of that. So many partners involved in that. And we were able to make a really competitive grant application with about $15 million in matching funds.
Wow. Okay.
Life is funny in that we initially did not get awarded the grant. Luckily, the federal government had some additional funding allocated. And so we got it in the second wave.
Oh, wow.
I can't tell you the emotions of, you know, months of work that went in on this, making, getting commitments from businesses in our industry and outside. I made a personal contribution to it. And so as deflating as it was when we heard we didn't get it, you know, it was the complete opposite when we found out that those additional funds came in.
How long was the gap between those two?
It was probably about 3 months. So, you know, you were left hanging out there. And then one day this email popped up that said, great news. And, you know, as I read through it, I just got so emotional because obviously it's a tremendous amount of impact. But what that grant really was for is to get 400 individuals and families off the street. So the way they kind of conceived the grant, you know, there's a by name list you work off of that all these service providers provide. And so this was the means to specifically get a little over 400 people off the street. And it makes a huge difference, obviously, in those people's lives, but in the look and feel of our community, too. So it was incredibly exciting to have that. At the same time that grant was being sought after, Councilmember Leslie Harris was really focused on what do we need to do as a city to impact this problem. She had done a tremendous amount of research. She had Tulane University do a couple studies around pallet shelters and other housing options. She actually went and visited a couple different alternative shelters in some other cities. And as she was going through that, she identified one that we needed a city department to lead on this. Prior to the establishment of the Office of Homeless Service and Strategy, Dr. Vegno, in her capacity as the city's health director, was really the one city employee that was tasked with homelessness. And it was purely from a maintaining the cleanliness and viability of these encampments, right? The plan wasn't about closing them down. It was, how do we keep the rats away? How do we prevent disease from being spread? How do we keep them, you know, safe and sanitary? And so with Leslie's support, the city council approved standing up the Office of Homeless Service and Strategy, recruited Nathaniel Fields from Baltimore, who's a tremendous leader who had lived experience and done great work there. And then on top of that, really got the city to commit funds from ARPA allocation and some other funds towards this. And at the same time, our leaders in the delegation at the legislature got some more funds appropriated from the state of Louisiana. You know, when I started this, all I heard was hey, all the funding we get comes from the federal government. The city and the state don't really put much towards this. And that's certainly not the case now, as it was 2 years ago. So that's an exciting piece of this, that we've got all this funding and resources. And then the last part of Councilmember Harris's plan was, let's really work with a world-class consulting group to help craft strategy and help Director Fields implement what we want to do here. And so that's when they brought in Clutch Consulting, who's done some tremendous work to really pull all these pieces together to say, how do we work together as a community, braid all these resources together, and not have a bunch of individual efforts, but have one collective effort that can really get people off the street.
It's interesting. So this problem has been developing over the last few decades, or has been expanding. And it sounds like just in the last couple of years now, a bunch of coordination and a bunch of money has been lined up to try and address it.
Exactly. So, you know, I think one of the only positive things of when you go through these challenges, like we've had with, you know, be it Katrina or Ida, or certainly COVID, which the entire country and world experienced, there are some additional resources that come into play. And so I think what we always advocate for is, how do you utilize that to make some big changes to your community, right? Be it, you know, infrastructure improvements or drainage improvements. And homelessness is certainly one of those things, like I said, that every community in this country is struggling with at some level. And so I'm very grateful that leadership at the state and city level decided this was a worthy item to tackle and really put some strong resources behind it in a way that we haven't done in the past.
As I understand it, Unity is the organization that will channel an individual or a family to the correct service provider based on whether it's a mother and two kids, or maybe it's someone who's struggling with addiction. And there's different nonprofits in town that provide temporary shelter or services to find housing. Is that correct?
That's a big piece of the picture. So a little bit more broadly, every community that receives federal funding from HUD has a continuum of care provider. So this is meant to be that umbrella organization, like you described, that really distributes those HUD funds to different entities that impact homelessness. And there's a level of coordination involved with that. Unity also itself is a service provider as well. So they provide a number of services to the unhoused population in addition to just being that continuum of care provider.
How do they get that designation? Is that a competitive thing and it can change every few years, or is it a contract, or how does that work?
My understanding, basically the state and the region designate that continuum of care provider, you know, and so Unity has been in that position for quite a while. I think for over 20 years, they've kind of been the continuum of care provider for this region. And, you know, like any other entity, it's a lot of work to handle. There's about 60 other organizations that fall under that umbrella that they oversee, distribute funds to, and support. So they really are, in a lot of ways, the experts when they come to this. Martha Cagle, their executive director, it took me some time, but I've gotten to know her quite well over the last few years. And really excited that we were able to support a lot of those efforts, especially with that task force to reduce street homelessness.
In the documentation, reading about the Home for Good initiative, I saw reference to three pathways to achieve the goals. Can you talk about those three pathways?
Yeah, certainly. So really, you know, I think when you look at what we're trying to do here, there's kind of three main things. It's the targeted encampment decommissioning. So hopefully folks in the community have taken notice. The first one we did was Chapultepec at that exit. That was really one of the big ways I initially got engaged in this. We were working with the convention center, the port, some other folks to try to understand what we could do about the population that was living in that encampment. And that led to these connections with Unity, Councilmember Harris's office, United Way, Ganoff, and really the start of that coalition. And so that's one of the core tenets is, let's look at these encampments that are housing a significant amount of people. There's a real public health risk there. Not to get too detailed, but rats are a huge problem. Communicable diseases are a huge problem. Obviously, people just living outside in the extreme weather that we have here in this part of the country is an extreme problem as well. And so they're really focused on targeting these encampments, establishing a by name list. So they basically kind of set a cutoff date to say, okay, this is the date we're going to operate under. The people that are living in this encampment by this date are who we're going to prioritize for the housing services initially to get them off the street. When they decommission that encampment, the focus is on getting all those individual housed. So Chapultepec, as an example, there was 42 people living there, and all those people were housed at the time of shutting that encampment down. The next part, there's some closure maintenance that goes with that. What do you do with that space to activate it so that it doesn't become repopulated? So in the example of Chapultepec encampment, there were commitments from my organization, Downtown Development District, the Port, the Convention Center, and a few other partners to do landscaping improvements, drainage that will beautify that area, but also keep it from being inhabited again. So along with that, encampment decommissioning, really coordinated housing navigation. And this is for everybody, not just the people living in the encampments, right? So even if you're in a shelter or if you're living in another situation without an encampment, this coordinated housing service is really the core of this mission. And so that's where a lot of those funds go that we're trying to raise with the Flex Fund. There are funds right now for housing vouchers for a significant number of people. But there's things that those housing vouchers don't cover, things like moving kits, security deposits, first month's rent. And so this Flex Fund is meant to help overcome that and provide additional support to get people into housing. In addition, there's actually a landlord engagement team, right? We recognize that this is a challenging population to rent to. There's some additional needs that come with it. And so that landlord engagement team is doing a couple of things. They're really trying to work with landlords, make sure they have a direct avenue to contact if they have any issues with the tenants. And they're also offering some incentives. Again, this is a challenging housing market. There's not a lot of affordable units. And so one of the things those flex funds can go towards also is some incentives for landlords to rent to this population. And then the last part is really about accelerating those exits from shelter to housing. So we have people that are living in shelters. You know, when I started digging into this, you know, people tell you, hey, it just takes time. You know, it just takes a long time. You have to be documented homeless for 12 months in a 36-month period through the National Homeless Information Management System, which is a massive database. You know, and people are kind of homeless for a little bit, and then maybe they're staying at somebody's house, and then they're on the street again, and they're living in a car, which is as tragic as living in a car, Ed, is that that's not technically homeless, right? And so if you're on the street or if you're in a shelter, that is when you are officially homeless, by the way they judge that period of time. And so what we're trying to do with this effort is really accelerate that pace, because we don't want people on the street for that long. You know, any issues that you hear about, mental health, alcohol, substance abuse, those things are all exacerbated the longer you're on the street. So as Mandy put it, you know, this is really rapid rehousing on steroids. We're trying to get people off the street rapidly. We're trying to shorten the stay in shelter and get them out of the shelter. And what you really do is kind of create a flow. You know, if you can imagine, when you look at this number, 1,500 folks that are homeless, you know, that represents kind of a backlog. And so the idea is, if we're able to clear that and get down to low to no homelessness, the whole system will operate more effectively, right? Your homeless prevention services will be more effective. You'll keep more people off the street. When people get on the street, we'll be able to get them into shelter quicker because there's not a backlog. And then conversely, we'll be able to get them out of shelter and into housing quicker as well. And so that's the goal, is to do this, but to do it at a rapid pace. And I really can't commend the housing navigators, the outreach workers, because a lot of these folks are really working with a sense of urgency, and in a level of speed that they've never had to operate under before. And so it is a bit of a stress to them, but they're really performing admirably, especially these last 4 or 5 months since this effort's really taken off.
Now, I imagine there's a spectrum of people that are living in these encampments and you are working with. Some are folks that can get into a new housing situation and theoretically get into an employment situation and be able to eventually make rent. What about folks that maybe have a serious mental illness and that sort of thing? What's the pathway for those folks? Where do they end up?
So they're also going to be prioritized for housing, right? So the model that this effort works under, the same model that you're really seeing around the country and in cities like Houston, is housing first, right? So the idea is that regardless of what challenges you have, if you are stably housed, that's a much better place to treat and address those from. Right. So that housing first model, it's not just putting people in an apartment, you know, and saying goodbye. So there's case management that comes with this. So every person will have a case manager that helps them navigate all the processes for mental health treatment, for any medical issues, substance abuse issues, and then those job services as well. Again, we're dealing with a big number here. And so those case managers are working really hard and they've got a lot of clients. But that is the ultimate idea, is that some folks will require a little bit less of that case management and will more quickly be able to kind of become, you know, worked back into society. Some folks will require permanent support. You know, the reality is these housing vouchers, they call them permanent supportive housing vouchers. So the idea is that you have to contribute at most a third of your income towards rent. For some people, they'll never be able to contribute anything, but that is a permanent subsidy that the federal government issues, right? And so it's a great resource, but the challenge with that, Rich, is that it is a permanent housing voucher. And so for some people, they're always going to need it. And so those vouchers don't come open that often, which is why that massive grant from HUD is so impactful. That's 400 additional housing vouchers that we didn't have in the community before.
So that's good. It gets the vouchers. Then the question is how to find the actual housing, right? Because you're the units.
Yes. And so the city's been really smart about this. They've dedicated a lot of funds towards really incentivizing development of affordable housing units, some new ones that will come online, which is great, but obviously that'll take some time for those to come online. You know, the effort is really about reaching out, making sure landlords and property owners know that, hey, this is a population that you can work with. We've got plenty of support. But there is a bit of this in the past that has really been a challenge. You know, that you've got case managers and outreach workers almost competing in the past to kind of identify those affordable housing units and get clients in there. And that's why, again, this being a collaborative effort, really braiding all these different groups together will help solve that to some extent. We still need more inventory, you know, and that's being developed. City Council is doing some things to really propose a housing fund and fund it with a portion of the budget every year to where we know there's money that's always going to be there to provide affordable housing, to help incentivize development, and to support folks that are struggling too.
Understood. Okay, last question is, if people are listening to this and wanting to help, what's the best way for people to help?
The best way is to go to homeforgoodneworleans.org. That's the overall branding of this effort. That's the website. And, you know, one of the things I want folks to understand, you know, this Flex Fund, this is a plan that's been enacted in other communities, Austin, Houston, Oklahoma City's enacting it now. And in most communities, that fund is really 100% private. You know, we're very fortunate here through the support we've gotten from the state, the city, that 95% of the cost of this project, you know, this is about a $68 million estimated project. 95% of the cost of that is really being contributed through public funds, right? So the ask of the business community of residents is to only help with 5% of this effort. And so that's what we're asking people to do. There's a number of organizations out there doing incredible work. People need a lot of help on the street. You know, people need water, people need blankets, but this effort is really focused on getting them off the street as quickly as possible. 100% of these funds are to get people off the street. The reality is in our community, my church does a service every year, St. Joseph Church, and about 84 people died last year living on the streets in New Orleans. And so this is something that obviously impacts the people experiencing it the most, but it also impacts our community. And so there's a number of ways to support these folks. But what I'm really asking people to think about is if the goal is to get people off the street, then Home for Good New Orleans is the best way to focus your effort and your resources by supporting that and making a contribution. Because again, 100% of these funds are dedicated towards getting people off the street.
Kevin Ferguson from New Orleans & Company, thanks so much for talking about this project with us.
Thank you, Rich. Really appreciate the time. And we've got a very responsible and charitable community here. And that's what makes this possible.
Thanks for listening. Biz Talks is brought to you by Biz New Orleans Magazine. Follow us on social media at Biz New Orleans and visit bizneworleans.com for daily news and stories.